All right, everyone, be seated. Who will your next witness be?
Laura Steidel.
Afternoon.
Yeah.
Place your left hand on the Bible and raise your right hand. Swear the testimony you're going to give to the truth, not the brother's truth. I hope you do.
I do.
Good. Thank you. Hello, Walt.
Mayor, can you state your name for the jury?
Laura Mosentine Steidel.
And Ms. Steidel, I apologize for mispronouncing your name. Where are you employed?
I am a forensic scientist specialist, too, at the Kentucky State Police Central Forensic Laboratory in Frankfort in the trace evidence section.
Can you briefly tell the jury about your educational background, your work experiences, and your qualifications?
I have a bachelor's degree in forensic science from Eastern Kentucky University. In addition to that, I have attended various seminars and workshops in the areas of trace evidence, including at the FBI Academy. I took a course on hairs and fibers, and I've also attended workshops throughout the years.
And have you testified as an expert in the Commonwealth of Kentucky?
I have.
How long have you been employed at the lab?
I've been employed at the lab for almost 25 years.
In this case, this is a little bit of a unique case in that it was investigated by both the Kentucky State Police and the Hopkinsville Police Department due to two different alleged victims in the case. Did you coordinate with both of them about certain items being sent for testing?
Yes, I did.
Are you primarily focused on hairs and fibers?
In this particular case, yes, that was that would have been the suitable type of evidence to look for.
Okay. First off, did you have any communication with them about possible hairs and fibers from a vehicle being compared to other items?
Yes, there was a vehicle in question that with trace evidence, we one of the things is to see if there's an association between a crime scene and a victim or a suspect, depending on the scenario. And in this case, they had requested trace evidence that could possibly be any associations. And my understanding was that the vehicle belonged to one of the victims, and they wanted to see if there could be an association to the subject, Mr. Spikes.
And my understanding is based on the kind of seats in the vehicle that was unable to be performed. Is that a fair statement?
Well, through asking questions, one of the things that could be looked for with trying to see if there's an association to a vehicle is if the seats are fabric, that the fibers, you could see if there was a transfer of fibers to clothing from someone who would have been in the vehicle, that there might be a transfer that occurs. However, they informed me, the detective informed me that the seats were either leather or vinyl, so therefore there was no fibers to look for.
Okay. Ultimately, were some materials submitted to you for your analysis?
Yes, I did receive items.
Okay. Can you tell me what all you received, what testing you performed?
I received item one, a blue ball cap, red t-shirt, and a cardboard ball cap insert that was collected from residents.
And really quickly before I continue, I apologize. Just for your information, you don't know this, everybody else in this room does, but all of the items you're about to describe have already been admitted into evidence in this trial, okay? Okay, so the jury probably kind of knows what each of these are, but the first one is the blue hat and a red t-shirt and a piece of cardboard within the hat. Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
Okay. You can continue. I apologize.
Item three was Nike athletic shoes from Bobby Spikes. Item four was denim jeans and belt from Bobby Spikes. Item 5 was a blue t-shirt from Bobby Spikes. Item 6 was a black Nike hooded jacket from Bobby Spikes. And item 12 was a head hair standard from Bobby Spikes that I received.
What analysis did you conduct and what were your conclusions?
So the analysis I conducted, first of all, in order to transfer items to the forensic biology section so that they could do their testing, I collected trace lifts, which is tape lifts, to collect any hairs. And so first of all, with my results, the head hair standard in item 12, which is the head hair standard from Bobby Spikes, was collected more than a year after the date of offense and therefore may not be representative of Bobby Spikes' hair at the time of the offense because hair can change over time. So we encourage that the hairs are collected as close to the offense date as possible, because if someone is like out in the seasons of the year, the sunshine, that it can affect the color tone of the hair. So the cardboard ball cap insert in item 1 was visually examined. No hairs were found on the cardboard insert. And then I collected the trace lifts from the items. And so items, I refer to them as 1.2, 4.2, 5.2, and 6.2, which were the trace lifts from the clothing, were examined for hairs suitable for nuclear DNA analysis. I did not receive a hair standard. There was not a hair standard collected from victim Mr. Bustle. Therefore, I had to focus on only hairs that were suitable for further testing by nuclear DNA analysis, because all I had was Mr. Spike's hair standard to compare it to, which it was his clothing, so you expect to find hairs that could belong to him on or hairs that would be similar to his standard on his clothing. One hair was found on item 1.2, which is the trace lift from the ball cap t-shirt and the insert, but it was the clothing, that is too limited for microscopic comparison and is suitable for nuclear DNA analysis. It was too limited for comparison under the microscope. That is due to either the sample size, which is very small, very short, or a lack of unique microscopic features, meaning I can't tell what part of the body it's from, or it's just there's just not much there to compare character-wise. Other hairs unsuitable for nuclear DNA analysis and animal hairs were also found on item 1.2. Three hairs were found on item 4.2, which is the denim jeans and belt from Bobby Spikes, that are unsuitable or too limited for microscopic comparison and are suitable for nuclear DNA analysis. Again, too limited is the sample size was too small for being able to compare it under the microscope, or I couldn't tell what part of the body it was from, because the only hairs that are suitable for microscopic comparison are head hairs or pubic hairs or sometimes facial hairs. The rest of the hairs on the body, such as arm hairs or leg hairs or chest hairs, they don't have enough unique characteristics between individuals to be able to do comparisons under the microscope with them. Other hairs unsuitable for nuclear DNA analysis and animal hairs were also found on item 4.2. And when I said that some of the hairs were unsuitable, the other parts of the body, those hairs aren't suitable to look at because of the lack of unique microscopic characteristics or the condition of the hair, like if it's very fragmented or something. One hair was found on item 5.2, which was the trace lifts from the blue t-shirt from Bobby Spikes, that is too limited for microscopic comparison and is suitable for nuclear DNA analysis. Other hairs unsuitable for nuclear DNA analysis and animal hairs were also found on item 5.2. One head hair with African origin characteristics was found on item 6.2, the trace lift from the hooded jacket, that is different from the head hair standard in item 12, and that's a non-association. This means that no association was made between the hair collected from the black Nike hooded jacket from Bobby Spikes and the head hair standard from Bobby Spikes. This hair is suitable for nuclear DNA analysis. And at this point, I said, if further analysis is requested, to please submit the head hair standard collected from Candace Marcel for comparison. No head hair standard was reported to have been collected for Stanley Bussell. Item 6.2 also contained other hairs not suitable for nuclear DNA analysis and animal hairs. And no analysis was performed on item 3, the Nike athletic shoes.
So if I'm understanding this, there's not really anything conclusive about this analysis for any hair, except for the black hooded jacket of the segment from Mr. Spikes. He did have a hair that might be suitable for further analysis, but you didn't have Candace's to compare it to, but it was not Mr. Spikes's hair. Is that a fair statement?
It was not associated with his standard. It was different from his standard. So I did not associate it with his standard.
So you requested, hey, send me some of Candace's hair to compare to this one from the hooded jacket, the Nike jacket, that is not Mr. Spikes's hair. Is that a fair statement?
I cannot say for certain that it is not. There is no association. It is different from his standard.
Gotcha. So did the police do that? Did they follow up with you by sending you a sample of Candace Marcel's hair?
Yes, I did receive a head hair standard from her.
And so you're comparing that to this hair on the Nike hooded jacket, the black jacket, because you requested them to do that, correct?
If they wish to do a further comparison with it, then I had mentioned that in the report, that if they had wanted to compare it to that they could send in the standard and compare it to her standard as well.
And did they do that?
Yes.
And did that lead to another analysis by you? And now you're looking at that one hair from the hooded jacket and comparing it to Candace's hair from her autopsy. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, I received a head hair standard that had been collected at autopsy, and I compared it to that particular hair that I had found on the jacket.
And what was the result?
The result of that was one head hair with African origin characteristics found on item 6.2, which was referenced in the previous laboratory report, was different from the head hair standard in item 1.5, also a non-association. This means that no association was made between the head hair collected on the trace lift from the black Nike hooded jacket and the head hair standard from Candace Marcel.
What does that, in layman's term, what does no association mean?
With no association, the unknown hair and the hair standard were different in observed macroscopic and or microscopic characteristics. Assuming the hair standard is representative, this indicates that the hair did not originate from the same source. Due to the natural variation that occurs in hairs as a biological specimen and the effect that time and environment may have upon a hair sample, these observed differences are insufficient for a definitive elimination. In other words, they were African origin characteristics also, and you can have sometimes we attempt to get a representative sample when we get a standard. However, if like the only colorless hair on your hair on your head falls off, and we get a representative sample of your hair as much as we can, and every other hair is not colorless, then, you know, that's not going to fall in the range of the sample that we have from your head. So because hair is a natural product, it's not manufactured, that you can have some variation that goes on that may not fall into the range of what the standard is. Therefore, we cannot say it's an elimination. It's definitely not from that individual. Also, with Mr. Spike's standard, it was collected a year after the date of offense. Therefore, I don't know from looking what his standard looked like at the time that this occurred.
Are all of your opinions based upon a reasonable degree of scientific certainty, your training and your experience in your field?
We don't tend to use that phrasing.
Okay.
Microscopic hair analysis is accepted in the field of forensic science.
And are your opinions based on your training and your experience?
Yes.
So if I'm, so if we focus in on that one hair from the Nike hooded sweatshirt, your opinion is that you cannot include or exclude Candace Marcel's sample opinion from the same person? You can't include it or exclude it? Am I saying that correctly?
No, because that would be an inconclusive result. My result is of non-association. I cannot associate them to the standard. And as I said, that if it's a representative sample, it indicates, but because it indicates that it didn't come from the same source. However, because hair is a natural product and that time and environment may affect the appearance of the hair, I can't definitely say it did not come from the individuals.
Okay. Did you prepare reports? I'm looking at 22C-2701, report 5, and 22C-2701, report 7.
Yes.
Maybe you approach, Judge. Almost to the 230 and 231, Your Honor.
And remarked and entered. Ross?
Thank you, Judge. I'll be quick to start off. So, going through, you conducted basically trace. Let me refer to the term you did here. Trace lifts, excuse me. With tape, looking for microscopic hairs.
I'm sorry, I'm having a little
You conducted trace lifts from each of these items that were submitted.
I collected trace lifts from the clothing items, yes.
Okay. Other than the, I believe, the shoes. That was item, item three. And you reviewed each of those under a microscope for...
I would have looked at them under a stereo microscope, and I might have looked at some of them under further microscope if I needed to,
okay.
Under a compound microscope if I needed to.
In any event, I want to get to the point. The items you found on 1.2, 4.2, and 5.2 were too limited or insufficient to draw any conclusions. Is that a fair assessment?
They were too limited to compare to any hair standards. I could determine that their human hair, but I was not able to use them for comparison purposes to the hair standards.
Okay. But they were suitable for nuclear DNA analysis.
I focused on, when I looked at the trace lifts, I focused only on hairs that could be tested further by nuclear DNA.
To your knowledge, was this done?
I did forward the items on to the biology section, the specific hairs that I referenced.
Okay. And the only suitable hair that you found for comparison was in 6.2.
I'm sorry. I need to clarify. Okay. The hair in item 6.2 was not forwarded on to the forensic biology section.
Just the first three items, those were forwarded on. Is that correct?
There would have been five hairs altogether.
I'll just refer them to the first three items as 1.2, 4.2, 5.2 for just kind of...
I'm sorry, I couldn't...
I'll just refer to those as 1.2, 4.2, and 5.2, rather than specifying how many hairs. I'm sorry.
Okay, I did subdivide from that, but it was from those items, okay. Yes.
And those were forwarded on for that nuclear DNA analysis.
Right, for testing by then, yes.
Okay. And 6.2, that's the only item that you found a suitable hair for comparison on?
That's correct.
Okay. But you could not find any association between the standard you were provided for Mr. Spikes?
No, there was no association. And just to clarify again, these are focusing only on hairs that were suitable for nuclear DNA testing. There were other hairs that might have been suitable for microscopic comparison,
yes.
But since they weren't suitable for nuclear DNA testing, I was only focusing on those that could be forwarded on for further analysis.
Sure. And then you also were able to compare that same hair of African origin to the standard you were provided by from Ms. Marcel?
Yes.
Okay. And there was no association there as well?
That's correct. Okay. The characteristics were different from her standard as well.
And if her standard was obtained at the time of the incident,
that's correct.
And this, and you're comparing it to what was obtained on the clothing at the time that you provided at the time of the incident. If there was going to be an association, you would expect it from what you've been submitted. From something that was basically obtained at the same time, or roughly close in time.
The time would not be a factor with hers there was not a time frame, so that's not one of the factors. But I can only say that it's different from her standard. I can't definitively say that it excludes her, because it is still the same ancestral origin characteristics, but the characteristics are different from her standard, and therefore there's no association between those two items.
So basically no association means you can't include her as well. You can't exclude her, but you can't include her. It's that.
It's a lower level of exclusion. It's because it's not an inconclusive. I am making a conclusion that hair is different from the hair standard.
Okay.
So that it's not associated with that.
Okay. All right. And then as far as the hair standards for Mr. Spikes, you obtained those were obtained, like you said, 12 months after the alleged incident.
It was more than a year after it. Yes.
So that could have impacted any comparison the 6.2.
It can be a factor, yes. And so we report out so that everyone is aware that it's like this could be one of the factors that would create a non-association.
Okay. That's all I have, Judge. Thank you.
That's it further, Your Honor. Call and make any deal with it.
Thank you, Mayor. Have safety going home.
Put your books down and place your left hand on the Bible. You swear the testimony and both the truth, but the truth about the God.
Ma'am, can you state your name for the jury and tell them why you're employed?
Yes, sir. My name is Megan Dillery Duff. I'm employed with the Kentucky State Police Central Forensic Laboratory in Frankfort, Kentucky.
Ms. Duff, can you tell the jury your educational background, your work experience, and your qualifications? I guess probably the first question I should ask is, what is your job title? What are you doing for life?
I am a forensic scientist specialist, too. That's part of our promotional system. I started as a forensic biologist, and I've promoted to our top analytical level, which is a specialist 2, and my primary job responsibilities are DNA analysis.
Can you tell them about your educational background, your work experience, your qualifications?
I have a Bachelor of Science degree in biotechnology from the University of Kentucky. I started in the lab a little bit over 15 years ago. I participated in the lab's formal training program for both DNA and serology. So serology is the identification of body fluids, and such as blood, semen, and saliva. And under in both of those formal training programs, I trained under qualified analysts. I was required to complete practice exercises on actual items, actually complete the tests, as well as doing oral exams, written exams, and a mock trial.
And have you testified as an expert witness before in the Commonwealth of Kentucky?
Yes, several times.
Am I correct in stating that in this case, it's a little confusing because there were two law enforcement agencies and you have two kind of different case numbers, but that you did three reports?
Yes, I completed three reports under two different laboratory numbers.
Okay. I'm going to just ask you the best order to go in. Which one do you want to talk about first and what you did?
That's a good question. I would start with probably 22C2701, report one.
Okay, I'm looking at it now. This has been pre-marked as Commonwealth Exhibit number 227. If you could, did you receive certain items at the lab and did you perform any examination or testing on those?
Yes, I received item seven. That was items collected from Stanley Bussell, including item 7.1, right-hand fingernail clippings and clippers. Item 7.2, left-hand fingernail clippings. Item 7.3, two $20 bills, two lens cleaning towelettes, and a pink receipt. And then item 9, blood standard from Stanley Bussell, and item 8, blood standard from Stanley Bussell, and item 9, buckle standard from Bobby Spikes. As a blood or a buckle standard is a known reference standard from that individual, and that allows me to know that person's DNA profile. A blood standard would be a blood draw from a body connected by a medical personnel, and then a buckle standard is just a swab from the inside of the cheek.
Okay, so you have all these items from Mr. Bussell's autopsy. This jury's kind of heard all about him. A couple $20 bills, some lens cleaning towelettes, clippings from his fingernails, and his blood standard as well as the defendant's blood standard, correct?
Yes, sir.
What were you looking for and what did you do?
So anything that looks like it contains blood, such as fingernail clippings, I'm going to test that. I'm a qualified serologist as well as a DNA analyst. So I'm going to do a visual examination on the items of evidence. So item 7.1, the right hand fingernail clippings and clippers. The clippings contain blood. Presumptive testing for human origin was positive. And then presumptive testing for blood was positive on item 7.2. That's the left-hand fingernail clippings. Presumptive tests do not confirm the presence of bodily fluids or human origin. So presumptive tests are going to give us an indication that that bodily fluid is present. Or in the case of the right-hand fingernail clippings, that test that I was able to do on that one, because there was sufficient staining, was confirmatory for blood, but the test is only presumptive for human origin. But in the DNA analysis step, I'm going to be able to confirm that there is human DNA.
Okay.
And then, do you want me to continue?
Sure.
Okay. DNA profiles were obtained from items 8 and 9 for comparison purposes. So those are those reference profiles. I received a reference from Stanley Bussell and a reference from Bobby Spikes. I obtained a DNA profile from those to use for comparisons. And then these are the results on the fingernail clippings. No DNA profile foreign to Stanley Bussell was found on item 7.1.1, swabs from right-hand fingernail clippings. That means that I got DNA from the fingernail clippings from Mr. Bussell. However, there wasn't any DNA that was different than his. And then DNA foreign to Stanley Bussell was present on item 7.2.1, swabs from left-hand fingernail clippings, but it was too limited for meaningful comparisons.
So DNA from his fingernail clipping on one hand was not foreign to him, Stanley Bussell. The other one was foreign to him, the other hand's clippings. but it's too limited to comparative body spots.
That is correct. There was a very small amount of foreign DNA on the left-hand fingernail clippings, but it was too limited for me to be able to make comparisons to Mr. Spike's profile or anyone else's profile.
Does that conclude everything from report number one that we've been referring to?
Yes.
Okay. If we move on to, you tell me where the next best place to go is.
And we can continue with outlaw number two, report number two.
And this has been Three Marches Commonwealth's exhibit number 226. You go ahead. What were you looking at, and what did you, what analysis did you conduct, and what's your opinion?
I conducted DNA analysis on five hairs that were collected by one of our trace analysts. I believe you may have already heard from her, Ms. Didell. So she's a trace analyst. She's going to collect those hairs and prep them and choose which ones to send for DNA. So she forwarded five hairs. Those hairs were labeled item 1.2.1, one hair from trace lifts collected from baseball hat and red shirt. Item 4.2.1, one hair from trace lifts from denim jeans from Bobby Spikes. Item 4.2.2, one hair from trace lifts from denim jeans from Bobby Spikes. Item 4.2.3, one hair from trace lifts from denim blue jeans from Bobby Spikes. And item 5.2.1, one hair from trace lifts from blue jeans from Bobby Spikes.
Okay. And what type of examination to do, and what was the results and conclusions?
So I performed DNA analysis on these items. I'm looking for human DNA to be present in order to proceed with my analysis. And so the results on these items were no human DNA was detected from items 1.2.1. That was the hair lift collected from the hair collected from the lifts collected from baseball hat and red shirt. Item 4.2.1, that was the hair from denim jeans from Bobby Spikes. And item 4.2.3, the hair collected from denim jeans from Bobby Spikes. So no human DNA was detected on all three of those items. The quantitation results for items 4.2.2, hair from lifts from Bobby from denim jeans from Bobby Spikes, and item 5.2.1, hair from trace lifts from blue t-shirt from Bobby Spikes, were insufficient for conclusions. So the quantitation step is that step that I was talking about to determine whether human DNA is present. And in this case, there was signal detected on that test. However, that signal was in the same level where we would expect background noise. So we're going to report that as insufficient for conclusions, or another way of saying that would be to be, say, inconclusive.
So those hairs were inconclusive and couldn't be tested further for a match of the DNA of any other individuals?
That is correct. There were three hairs where there was no human DNA, so I could not proceed, and then two hairs that were insufficient for conclusions at quantitation, meaning there was not sufficient DNA also to proceed to make comparisons.
The ones that weren't human DNA, was there DNA just wasn't human?
So my testing is only going to test for the presence of human DNA. It's not going to test for the presence of DNA from any other species or bacteria or anything like that.
So we don't know if it possibly come from an animal or could it come from a wig?
So I'm not a trace analyst. My understanding is that they are able to identify hair from humans versus hair from animals, and they would not forward a hair that they believe to be from an animal for human DNA testing.
I think we just heard that from our last witness. Does that conclude everything from that one?
Yes, that is everything from this lab number.
And then finally, do we have another report that you prepared? Can you tell us what all you looked at in your analysis?
Yes. So I have a report from lab number 22W00558. That's report number two. I would have used the profiles that I got in the other lab case for comparisons, those profiles from Mr. Bustle and Mr. Spikes as a cross-reference, because we were told that these were related. But in this particular lab number, I received a buccal standard from Candace Marcel. That's a known reference standard again. Fingernail scrapings from Candace Marcel containing item 3.1 right hand fingernail scrapings and item 3.2 left hand fingernail scrapings. I received a second reference standard from Candace Marcel labeled item 4. That was a blood standard. I received item 5, 9mm Luger shell casing. Item 6, driver interior pull handle. Item 7, swabs from driver interior door panel handle. Item 8, swabs from steering wheel. Item 9, swabs from gear shift. Item 10, swabs from center console latch. Item 11, swabs from front passenger exterior door handle. Item 12, control swabs. Item 16, swabs from left handprint located on roof of convertible. And item 17, swabs from right handprint located on roof of convertible.
Okay. So you're taking all of these items, fingernail clippings from Ms. Marcel's autopsy, the shell casing, all of these items taken from the processing of the vehicle, as well as, yeah, that covers multiple things from the vehicle. Are you looking for DNA on these?
Yes, so I performed DNA analysis on these items. I did not perform analysis on items 11, 12, 16, and 17. Item 11 is the front passenger exterior door handle. Item 12 is control swabs. Item 16 is left handprint located on roof of convertible. And item 17 is swabs from right handprint located on roof of convertible. Those swabs do not meet our case acceptance policy. We don't test exterior swabs from doors at our laboratory.
Why is that?
Variety of reasons. They often are compromised because they've been outside, exposed to the elements. It's a car. Usually those live outside, as well as being on the exterior of a car. If it's just a touch swab, may not provide a lot of information versus something that's interior. So we'll test interior swabs of the car.
Okay. And can you talk about your results from the other items?
Yes. So no DNA profile foreign to Candace Marcel was found on item 3.1.1, swabs from right-hand fingernail scrapings. DNA foreign to Candace Marcel was found on item 3.2.1, swabs from left-hand fingernail scrapings, but was too limited for meaningful comparisons.
I want to stop you right there really quickly. So you've got fingernail clippings or scrapings from Ms. Marcel's autopsy. You're looking at two of those. The first one is nothing foreign from DNA, nothing foreign from Candace's DNA.
That's correct. There was no DNA that was different than her profile.
The second one, 3.2.1, is a swab from her left hand fingernail scrapings. And there was DNA foreign to her?
Yes.
But it was too limited to compare to body spikes or any other human?
That's correct. There was foreign DNA, meaning DNA that was different to Ms. Marcel, but it was too limited for meaningful comparisons, meaning that I detected a very small amount and it was not suitable to compare to Mr. Spikes or anyone else.
I think that makes sense to a normal person like me, but I mean, do you get biological sample and it's just not enough DNA there to go any further? Is that what we're kind of understanding?
Yeah, so there was enough DNA to get a profile from this item. A profile is simply a list of the places on the DNA molecule that I test and the result in each of those places. So most of the DNA between individuals is going to be the same. Over 99% of DNA between all humans is the same. My testing looks at 23 locations where individuals are known to be different. Those differences can be measured. Those differences are based on length. So you'll have a repeating sequence of that section of your DNA, and we'll have different lengths among individuals. what I can do is compare the DNA profile that I got from the evidence. So the profile is simply a list of the places that I tested and the result at those places. And I can compare that to, for example, in this case, compared to Ms. Marcel. I can see what DNA is the same as hers and what DNA is different. I'm looking for DNA that's different from her because the swab was taken from her body. I expect her DNA to be there. And so I'm looking for somebody different to compare to. And I'm going to go, I can look in my results here. It's part of my notes and actually give you a number. And on those left-hand swabs, there were I only detected two segments of DNA that were different than Miss Marcel. Instead of that 23, which would be a complete profile, I only detected two places because DNA, these alleles, these different results are present in the population. I am not going to make a comparison when I only have two places to compare to because that would not be meaningful. There would be so many people that would have only two places in common. At 23 places, we expect that everyone is going to have a different profile except for identical twins. But at two places, I would expect that lots of people would have alleles in common, would have results in common. And so I'm not going to make a comparison. My laboratory has a threshold where we have to have enough information. We have to have enough of that profile to be able to make a comparison.
So we have covered the fingernail scrapings at this point. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's move on to the showcasing.
The quantity of human DNA detected on item 5.1, swabs from shell casing, was insufficient for analysis. That means that there was human DNA detected, but it was not enough to proceed to get a DNA profile.
Let's move on to item 6, and item 6 would be the swabs from the driver's interior pull handle. So this would be from the vehicle from the inside where the door handle is on the driver's side. Is that correct?
So item 6 was described as drives from driver interior pull handle. And the partial DNA profile from item 6 swabs from driver interior door pull handle. Oh, sorry, interior pull handle, yes. Is a mixture of at least two individuals. Due to the possibility of undetected genetic information, no meaningful comparisons can be made. So the DNA profile for item 6 is a mixture, which means that there's DNA from more than one person. In this case, this is a mixture of at least two individuals. So a minimum of two people were contributing to this sample. This sample was very low level. And as I talked about before, my laboratory has validated thresholds and ranges in which we can be certain that we're seeing enough information to make a meaningful comparisons. For this mixture, because it was too low level and it was partial, meaning I was missing information, it was not suitable for making comparisons. So I didn't compare it to any of these individuals in this case.
But at least two people contributed their DNA to this very small amount of DNA.
Yes, there were there is DNA from at least two people that with the possibility of more.
Okay. We're going to move on to the next one. You kind of cover 7, 8, and 10 at the same time. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, so 7, 8, and 10 had not necessarily the same profile, but the same category of result.
Before we talk about that, what are 7, 8, and 10?
So 7 is swab from interior door panel handle. So item 8 is swabs from steering wheel, and item 9 is swabs from gear shift. So the DNA profiles from all three of those items, item 7, 8, and 9, so the interior door panel handle, the steering wheel, and the gear shift, are mixtures of at least four individuals. Due to the complexity of these mixtures, no meaningful comparisons can be made.
So we're talking about the door panel on the driver's side, the gear shift and steering wheel. All of them have at least four people's DNA, and you can't compare it because of the complexity of the mixtures. Is that a fair?
That is correct.
The more people that touch an item, does that make it more complex and more difficult to specifically compare it to a human? The specific here.
Yes. So with mixtures, a requirement of our analysis is doing mixture interpretation, which is trying to break down that mixture into its components or parts. This particular mixture had so many people contributing to it, and the range of those contributors was such that it could not be broken out into its parts, so it was too complex to be able to make comparisons.
And just to be clear, this might be a silly question, but you had Bobby Spikes' DNA standard from a buccal swab ready to compare that to, but because of the mixture, you can't compare it to any sector standard.
Yes, I had a buccal standard from Bobby Spikes. I was able to get a profile from that standard. I'm going to make all my determinations on any unknown items before I look at the standard. So I'm going to look at the unknown item. I'm going to make a determination to the quality of that profile, the number of contributors, whether that profile is suitable for comparisons or not suitable for comparisons. If it's a mixture, I'm going to break it out into its parts before I ever compare to anybody's standard in order to be the most fair and unbiased.
I think I just misspoke when I was talking about those items. That's the door panel on the driver's side. That's the steering wheel. I may have said gear shift, but that's not good. It's the center console latch.
Yes, it is the center console latch. I also misspoke.
So we have not got to the gear shift yet. That's correct. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's item 9.
All right. So is the next item going to be the gear shifter?
Yes, so item 9 is the gear swabs from the gear shift. The DNA profile from the swabs from the gear shift is a mixture of at least 3 individuals. The major profile matches Stanley Bussell. The estimated frequency of this profile is 1 person in 7 non-alien, random, unrelated individuals based on the relevant United States populations. This profile does not match Candace Marcel or Bobby Spikes. Due to the possibility of undetected genetic information, no meaningful comparisons can be made to the minor component.
Okay, so I guess the logical question is, what is a major component, what's a minor?
So I talked about doing mixture interpretation, where we break that mixture up into its parts. So in some mixtures, I can break the mixture up into the major contributor and then the minor contributor or the remainder of the mixture. A major contributor is someone that's typically contributing over 70% to that mixture, meaning that DNA is 70% of the DNA in that sample is coming from one person, and then the remainder of the sample. In this case, I estimated it to be about 80% of the DNA was coming from one contributor. And this is a mixture of at least 3 individuals, meaning there was DNA from at least 3 different people. That major profile that I separated out and identified, I then compared to all the standards that were submitted in this case. And that major profile matched Stanley Bussell, with an estimated frequency of their profile is 1 person in 7 non-alien random unrelated individuals based on the relevant United States populations. That major profile did not match Candace Marcel or Bobby Spikes. Due to the possibility of undetected genetic information, no meaningful comparisons can be made to the remainder or the minor component in that mixture, meaning that minor component of the mixture was low level, and I had in that range with my thresholds, I knew that there was the possibility of missing information.
So correct me if I misstate anything. On the gear shift, you've got your testing for DNA. You can see that it's at least 3 people that are contributing.
Yes.
One of the human beings who is contributing to this is a major component, meaning there's way more of their DNA than anybody else's.
Yes, in this case, about 80% of the sample.
So in that 80% of the sample, it's standing for you can't say for certainty, but a 1 in whatever that astronomical number is, it's 1 in 79 million random unrelated individuals. So very high likelihood that it's Stanley Bussell.
What I can say is that The major profile matched, meaning it was the same as the profile from Stanley Bussell, and the estimated frequency of that profile is one person in seven non-alien random unrelated individuals based on the relevant United States populations. That number is to give you an idea of how rare or how common that profile is. Back in the old days when they used to do only blood testing, a lot of times statistics that that scientists would provide would be something like one in four. That's not very rare. In this case, that number is 70 non-alien random unrelated individuals based on the relevant United States population. So that would be more rare. That's giving an indication of how rare or how common the profile is.
And that's a major contributor to that DNA. There's at least three people. One person is contributing over 70% of the DNA, or maybe 80, you said?
Yeah, I estimate it to be 80%. In the sample, typically a major would be somewhere around 70% or more.
So then the next step is to look at the minor contributors. What humans may have contributed to that other small percentage of that DNA there, because it's a mixture, correct?
Yes, it is a mixture.
And when you're looking at that minor component, it's too limited and no meaningful comparisons can be made.
Yes, the minor component was due to the possibility of undetected genetic information, meaning that this was low level and that it is possible that I am missing, especially where this is a mixture. I'm missing information. I'm not seeing the whole picture for that minor component. And no meaningful comparisons can be made, and no meaningful comparisons were made to that minor component.
So just so it's clear, if the jury looks at your report, when you're saying Candace, Marcel, and Bobby Spikes can be eliminated from the gear shift, they can be eliminated from the major contributor.
That is correct. The major profile does not match Candace, Marcel, or Bobby Spikes. I did not compare them to that minor component.
But they cannot be eliminated from the minor contributor.
That no comparisons were made to the minor.
Okay. And then one item I think was the shell casing. It was sent on for further analysis, and we'll hear from that person. Is that correct?
Yes. Item 5, the 9-millimeter shell casing, Luger shell casing, was forwarded to APHIS for latent print analysis.
All right. Your Honor, I would, may we approach really quickly? These were admitted, Your Honor. Okay. Madam Clerk, 226, 227, and 228 have been admitted. You prepared three live reports that we've been discussing throughout this testimony. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Are all the opinions that you've expressed to this group based on a reasonable degree of scientific certainty, based on your analysis of these items, based on your training and your experience and qualifications that you've discussed?
So reasonable degree of scientific certainty is not a statement that we would use in science. It doesn't have a very specific meaning. What I can tell you is that I am confident in the results that I produced. I'm confident in my testing, and I'm confident in the comparisons that I've made.
I've been a prosecutor too long. I'm saying what we used to say, and I got to change what I said. So you're confident in these results based on your training, your experience, and your qualifications, and the testing that you described to the jury.
Yes, sir.
No further questions.
Sure.
Thank you, Judge.
All right. All right, Ms. Duff, I just have a few quick questions. I'm just going to go each these reports one by one. As far as the first report regarding the fingernail clippings from Mr. Bussell, as well as the items, the $20 bill, two rooms cleaning towelettes, et cetera. Essentially, based upon the testing, we found you were unable to find anything. You came back to Bobby Spikes.
I did not have anything in report one on the right-hand fingernail clippings or the swabs from the left-hand fingernail clippings that I was able to compare to Mr. Spikes.
And as a result, you can't say Mr. Spikes is a contributor to any of these. Is that correct?
That is correct. I cannot answer the question whether Mr. Spikes is a contributor to these profiles.
Okay. And a contributor is just basically someone that may have sloughed off some DNA. Is that a fair statement?
So we would use contributor, meaning there is the possibility that their DNA might be present in a sample. I'm not going to be able to answer in my testing how that DNA originated on a sample, just that it was present.
And it could be anyone, really, in the population, essentially.
Are you speaking of the left-hand fingernail clippings?
Well, anyone can be a contributor to DNA.
Yes, all human beings have DNA in their body. It gives us those characteristics of being human, and we can transfer that to items, okay. Yes.
Yes. And as far as moving on to the second report with the clothing collected from Mr. Spikes, you were not able to make any meaningful. You detected no DNA on 1.2.1, 4.2.3. There was no DNA on those items.
There was no human DNA detected from items 1.2.1, 4.2.1, or 4.2.3.
And there was insufficient, and whatever you found on the other two items was insufficient to draw any conclusions.
That is correct.
And then finally, the last report was the other items from the vehicle. And the only DNA profile that you were really able to pull out was in item 9, correct? And that was for Stanley Bussell.
Yes, the only profile that I was able to make comparisons to was the major profile from item 9, which is swabs from the gear shift. And that major profile matched Stanley Bussell with an estimated frequency of 1 person in 7 non-million random unrelated individuals based on the relevant United States populations. That profile did not match Candace Marcel or Bobby Spikes.
And as far as the anything else that you observed on the other items, including item 9, there was not enough there to determine who the possible contributor was, regardless of whether it was Candace Marcel, Bobby Spikes, or anyone else that may be in the population of this area.
Yeah, that is correct. The remainder of item 9, as well as the other items that I tested, did not have, I was not able to make meaningful comparisons to those, or they were insufficient for further analysis.
That's all I have, Judge. Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
You're okay to keep calling.
How much longer do you think it'll be?
We have 3 more lab analysts. I think hopefully they will go somewhat quickly.
Go on, Chamber.
Our next witness.
I call Benjamin Garrison.
I should put on the bottom. Let me show you what I think. Swear the testimony you're about to give me the truth, nothing but the truth you have about.
I do. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Garrison, can you say your name for the jury and tell them where you're employed?
My name is Benjamin Garrison, and I am employed at the Kentucky State Police Central Forensic Laboratory in Frankfort, Kentucky. I'm a part of the trace analysis section.
Can you tell this jury as quickly as possible your educational background, your qualifications, and your screening?
I have a Bachelor's of Science in Forensic Science from Eastern Kentucky University, and I have completed the in-house training program offered by the Kentucky State Police Laboratory System in gunshot residue analysis, and also have completed coursework from Florida University International and the Hood College of Applied Science in scanning ultrasound microscopy and gunshot residue analysis.
Thank you. And are you, did you testify as an expert in Commonwealth of Kentucky?
Yes, I have.
How long have you worked in the lab?
I've worked with the lab since 2005 and have been doing GSR analysis since 2015.
GSR analysis is gunshot residue, is that correct?
That's correct. It is the residue from the primer of a cartridge.
Were you provided with some items in this case to complete some gunshot residue analysis on it?
Yes, I received 6 items in this case. It looks like 4 items contained clothing. Yes, 4 items contained clothing. There was also a pair of shoes. And I received a gunshot residue collection kit from the hands of Bobby Spikes.
So this jury's heard a lot of testimony today, but in terms of what was provided to you, it came from the Hopkinsville Police Department, correct?
That is correct.
They've heard testimony today about this, but you got a baseball hat, a blue hat, correct?
I got a baseball hat, yes.
A red shirt?
That's correct.
Nike shoes, denim jeans, a blue t-shirt, and a dark polo jacket, all those items affiliated with Bobby Spikes.
That is correct.
Did you perform, did you also have a GSR kit of his hands that were swapped from his hand?
I did receive that, yes.
Let's deal with that one first. Did you perform any analysis on what was collected from his hand?
Did not perform any analysis on the kit collected from his hands. The sample was taken more than 4 hours after the incident occurred, and that does not fit the laboratory's acceptance policy. Gunshot residue can be continuously lost from the hands just through normal activity, and so there's a window of 4 hours as to when that sample needs to be collected.
So the police provided that to you, but you saw that it had been collected more than 4 hours after, so it was not tested.
That's correct.
Okay, so let's get to what you did test and what you did. Can you just kind of take over and tell me what you tested?
Sure. I tested item 1, which was found to contain, which was the baseball hat and red shirt. I found that item to contain particles with lead, antimony, and barium, which are characteristic of gunshot residue. I also found that item to contain 2 particles with lead, antimony, or barium, calcium, silicon, which are consistent with gunshot residue. Characteristic particles are things that are particles that are gunshot residue, and the consistent particles are ones that could come from gunshot residue but could have other sources as well. So I found the characteristic particles on the hat and shirt, or the item containing the hat and shirt. I did not find any gunshot residue particles on the denim jeans that were submitted. I did not analyze the shoes that were submitted.
Why did you not analyze the shoes?
We don't routinely analyze shoes for gunshot residue. It's just not a good item. Shoes routinely have all sorts of other particles and dirt and grime on them and are not commonly in the vicinity of the discharging firearm. I also tested the blue shirt. Found it to contain 1 particle containing lead, antimony, and barium, which was characteristic of gunshot residue, and 2 particles containing lead, antimony, or barium, calcium, silicon, which were the consistent particles with gunshot residue. When we find gunshot residue on an item, we state that the presence of gunshot residue on an object is consistent with that object at some time in its history being in the vicinity of a firearm when it was discharged or coming in contact with an object that was near a firearm when it was discharged.
Okay. So is there a difference between saying that there are particles and saying that there's gunshot residue? Can you explain that again? I apologize.
Sure. So when we're looking for gunshot residue, the gunshot residue we're looking for is made from the primer of the cartridge. The majority of primers in the United States contain compounds that contain lead, antimony, and barium. When that primer is discharged, it vaporizes those compounds into a large cloud of hot gas, and those particles condense. And we are looking for particles that contain all 3 of those elements and also have a morphology or shape that is consistent with being formed in a very hot environment. And so when we find particles that contain the lead, antimony, and barium, we call those characteristic of gunshot residue. Sometimes in that hot cloud of gas, particles formed that contain only two of those three elements. And those elements can be formed in GSR, but can also be found in other things in an environment. So we call those consistent with gunshot residue. So the particles I found on item one that I listed as saying contain the lead, antimony, and barium are characteristic of gunshot residue. However, the ones that only contain two of the three of those elements are consistent and could have other sources.
So am I right, Sam, when you're talking about the blue baseball hat and the red shirt, they contained lead, antimony, and barium. They were characteristic of gunshot residue from a discharged firearm. That's a little bit stronger of an opinion as to that being gunshot residue.
That's correct.
Okay. Can gunshot residue be transferred from the hands to a hat by touching it?
Yes, it's just like any other particle you might have on your hands or on an object like dust. It can be transferred through contact.
So you get a bag, and inside that bag is a hat and a t-shirt, a red shirt. That's the strongest result you have in this case.
I'm sorry, could you ask that again?
You have a bag, and inside that bag is a blue hat and a red shirt.
Right.
And in terms of your strongest opinion about it being gunshot residue, it's that bag.
Yes, so on the red hat and blue shirt, the item containing the red hat and blue shirt, I did find particles characteristic of gunshot residue.
I think you said that bag was a blue hat and red shirt.
Sorry, yes. Okay. I have it listed as baseball hat and red shirt. But okay. Yes, I found particles characteristic of gunshot residue on those items.
Okay. Then the jeans, you're not able to say, have characteristics of gunshot residue. Is that correct?
I did not find any particles on the jeans.
Okay. Shoes you didn't test, what was collected from his hands you didn't test, and you explained why. The blue shirt and the dark jacket, can you tell me again your results on those two?
Yes. The blue shirt, I have it's our item five. I found one particle on the blue shirt that is characteristic of gunshot residue, and I found two particles that are consistent with gunshot residue.
So that could be gunshot residue, but it also could be other contributing things.
That's correct.
What other things could contribute?
Some things that could possibly be sources for the consistent particles are things like fireworks or brake pads, things like that are found in an environment.
Okay. And was the same the result for the dark colored jacket?
The dark colored jacket. I found two consistent particles on the dark colored jacket. Two particles consistent with gunshot residue.
All right. Are all of your opinions based on your training, your experience, and your qualifications, and on your testing of these items?
Yes.
Did you prepare a report? 22C-2701, report number 3.
Yes, I did.
Crown Act Brady Damages, Commonwealth's Exhibit 229.
Oh. No questions?
Oh, okay.
I was just saying if there's an objection to this.
No objections. Okay. No further questions.
It'll be marked and entered with the report. All right, Mr. Garrison, I'll start with 1.1. You indicated that you found lead, antimony, and barium, which are consistent with particles discharged from a firearm. Is that correct?
The particles found on item one that contain antimony, barium, and lead are characteristic of gunshot residue.
So basically, it means it's consistent. Would that be fair?
We call it characteristic because it's consistent. It's a completely different class of particle.
So, but that doesn't that doesn't preclude other possible sources. Is that correct? Would that be fair?
Studies have shown the only other possible source for particles with this morphology and the three element composition are tools that contain cartridges.
And but you only found one. Is that correct? One particle or some particles?
On item one, reported that particles were found. We stopped using a number after we find more than six. So on item one, I found more than six particles that were characteristic of gunshot residue.
Okay. And then you found two particles containing just some
some of these items, which could also originate from other sources.
On that item, I found two particles that are consistent with gunshot residue, yes.
Okay, but they could originate from another source.
That's correct.
Okay. The same, and that would be the same with 6.1.
6.1.
Which is the dark colored jackets.
6.1, the dark colored jacket. I found two particles that are consistent with gunshot residue.
Okay. And they said also that they originate with other sources.
That is correct.
Okay. And one particle on 5, which is the blue t-shirt.
Yes, one particle on item 5 that was characteristic of gunshot residue.
Okay. And these are metals that you could find. These are typically metals you find in a manufacturing environment.
Some of them are, yes. But what we're looking for is all three of these elements combined in one single particle.
Okay. But each of these could be transferred from different processes, correct?
The metals on their own, yes. Studies have shown that a particle with the morphology that these have, the shape that these were found to have, whether it's with round spheroidal shape, from being formed in a hot environment and containing all three of the elements together, are characteristic of gunshot residue.
Okay. But again, you could acquire one of these items, another of these items, and another of these items over a course of time, and you may find all three of these particles.
Sorry, what do you mean by items? Are you referring to the individual elements?
Each of these individual elements, excuse me.
When I'm reporting that a particle contains these three elements, we have found that all three of these elements are within a single particle. They're within one actual physical particle. They're not separate from each other.
But, and again, you could find these items in a manufacturing environment, especially when you're dealing with metals or heavy metals.
Are these elements, individual elements found in these environments? Possibly, yes.
So, and especially in the manufacturing environment where they're manufacturing large equipment with heavy metals and it's a hot environment.
These individual elements possibly, but again, these particles we're talking about with gunshot residue are formed in very hot gaseous environments, not the kind of hot environments you're talking about when you're talking about climate. And when you find these three elements together, that is characteristic of gunshot residue.
Okay. And again, you have no, even with these elements being present in our article of clothing, you have no idea when this was transferred. If it was transferred to the item of clothing, you have no idea when that was actually came in contact with that item of clothing.
That's right. The analysis does not give me any indication of time frame.
So this could have been a month prior.
That is a possibility.
And it could have transferred from another piece of article of clothing.
It could have, if it came in, this article of clothing came into contact with something that had been in the vicinity of a firearm, that could cause transfer, yes.
So if there was a discharge or fireworks on another occasion previously, and it got onto someone's clothing and they threw them into a pile, it could transfer to some other items.
What article of clothing are we talking about here, Honor?
We're talking generalities here, Judge. So say someone ignites a firework and sets it off and it explodes. I think some of your testimony was that could occur from a firework, correct? These items.
Some of the consistent particles could. However, the characteristic particles would be excluded as coming from a firework.
But also, if a firearm was discharged on a prior occasion and it got onto some clothing, say a month prior.
If the clothing was near a discharged firearm, that particle would stay on the clothing until something removes it.
Okay, and if it brushed against another article of clothing, it could transfer those particles to another article of clothing.
That is possible, yes.
So if I had a shirt that I went shooting in and I had gunshot residue on that shirt and I threw it into a pile of clothing, it's very likely that it could transfer particles to the other shirts in that may be there.
That is a possibility, yes.
Okay. And just to summarize, you have, and you answered this already, but just to summarize, you have no idea. Your testimony is that you just found these elements or these particles on the clothing, but you don't know when it came into contact with this clothing.
The analysis cannot put a timeframe on when the particles were deposited.
All right. Deputy Clerk of the Judge.
Just to be clear, because we're talking, you got different results for different articles. Oh, correct.
Yes.
So let's talk about them specifically. The hat and the shirt for item one, they're in the same bag together, delivered to you. Is that correct?
Yes, the baseball hat and the red shirt were delivered to me in a single paper bag.
Those items had all three of those particles, or all three of those elements within the same part.
Yes, the item one, which was the baseball hat and red shirt, contained characteristic particles, which contained all three of those elements together in individual particles.
And they have the, I apologize, the high heat.
The morphology.
The morphology is a component of that article.
That's correct.
So that article clothing didn't come with fireworks?
No, the characteristic particles that were found on item one would be excluded as coming from fireworks.
Not fireworks, not manufacturing in a job. The only thing else may be some tools that have cartridges in it.
That is correct.
So that item is not fireworks or working at a factory.
That is correct.
The other items may have had the individual particles that could have come from fireworks. That would be the jacket and the blue shirt.
Yes, the other clothing items, I found the consistent particles.
Okay. Nothing further, Your Honor.
Now, if another individual were to have these items on their hands, and they took control, and these were handed to these items. These items were handed to these individuals. Are these particles likely to transfer to their clothing?
Are you asking if gunshot residue particles could transfer from someone's hand to the item?
Yes.
Clothing? Yes, that is possible.
So if I took my shirt off and handed it to someone that had these, had been firing a firearm, such as a police officer, they could transfer.
If that person has gunshot residue on their hands, it could transfer to the article of clothing.
All right, thank you.
In your field and in law enforcement, when people handle physical evidence, they wear gloves, correct?
Objection.
Questions. Thank you. Here you go. Our next witness. Mr. Chairman, I would call. Keith Gallagher.
You step around here, please, and place your left hand on the Bible and raise your right.
Swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth and tell you about the truth. I'm going to pick
up. I do.
Sir, can you please state your name for the jury?
My name is Keith Dollinger. Last name is spelled D as in David, Dollinger.
Thank you, sir. Can you tell the jury where you're employed?
I'm employed at the AFA section, the latent print unit of the forensic laboratory in Frankfurt.
And can you tell this jury your educational background, your qualifications, and work experience?
Yes, sir. I started Started my career in latent print examination in 1994 in Louisville Metro. I began as a booking officer and then moved up. And then moved on after I completed their training program into latent print examination. In 2006, I was hired by Kentucky State Police for the APHIS section, latent print unit. Over the course of that, I've had over 1,000 hours of training and instruction and education in the field of latent print examination, latent print photography, crime scene investigation, and related matters.
Have you testified as an expert before in trials in the Commonwealth of Kentucky?
Yes, I have, sir.
In this case, were you provided with some items for examination?
Yes, sir.
You used the term latent print. Can you tell the jury what that means?
Yes, sir. When we look at the palm side of our hands, and for that matter, the soles of our feet, we'll find the skin is corrugated into ridges and furrows. Now, the way these ridges and furrows form is in distinctive individual patterns and individual characteristics within those patterns that will... That will go to the... Now, that will be distinct to that individual. Then we come to the... Then a latent print is left in sweat, skin oil, or some other foreign substance. So, for example, if you use hair oil or gel and you have it on your hands when you scratch your head, and you and it will transfer like a rubber stamp to what you touch. And there again, like a rubber stamp, however, it can be smudged or smeared and not be usable.
Okay, so the force you're using to touch something or the direction of your hand you'd use to touch something, would it affect how good of a print you were able to observe?
Yes, sir, it would. It also depends on the surface. For example, if it's dusty, you're probably not going to get a good print unless it's a takeaway print. And the circumstances have to align just right. Basically, it's an kind of a mirror image where it takes the dust away. So you've got the outline of the ridges in clean and dust where the furrows would be in the pattern. Also, you would have to consider that besides force, there has to be just the right amount. For example, going back to my ink stamp analogy, if you really gum it up at ink, it's going to be nothing but a blob on the surface. Same way with whatever material is on your hand. And if you don't have enough, it's going to be a ghost image, or it may leave no image at all.
Okay. Earlier today, this jury heard testimony from Detective Nathan Moore and also Detective Trevor Pervine from the State Police about a vehicle found abandoned on Cerulean Road in Trig, with a shell casing found outside of that vehicle. Were you provided in this case with a shell casing as well as five latent lifts from the vehicle and the rearview mirror of the vehicle?
Yes, sir, I will. I was given a spent cartridge case. I was given a rear view mirror. I'm not enough of an expert on cars to tell you make and model it came from, but and five latent lifts.
And did you analyze those items?
Yes, sir, I did.
Explain to me your analysis and tell us any opinions or conclusions you reached.
Excuse me again. I went to first thing we do always do is a visual examination. And that's simply looking with your eyes to see if anything might actually be visible that you can take a photograph of and preserve it that way. Then we would move on to different processing techniques. For instance, the rear view mirror, I believe, did get a... I ended up having to saw something that might be promising on the mirror itself, as opposed to the housing, but it wasn't quite enough to work with. I went on and process the rearview mirror with super glue. And it's a very simple, principle on that one's very simple. Thank you, sir. But the principle on that one's very simple. If you've ever had a tube of crazy glue leak onto your fingers and your fingers instantly stick together, then you already know that super glue has an affinity for the sweat and skin oil that make up latent print residue. We fume this by heating it up in a chamber, and it starts to bind to the prints that are left in red, that are left on an object. And I was also eventually able to develop a print on the rear view mirror, which I had designated L14A after the item number.
Okay.
Now,
so on that, do you want to just start with the rear view mirror print then? What was your conclusion on that after analyzing it?
Well, I did several different things. One of the problems I ran into was it didn't lift well. And taking a photograph on the mirror, I had a little trouble getting it lined up so that I wouldn't get a ghost image, because the mirror has an internal bevel on it. That's a product of having the night, as I understand it, because when you're at night and you want to reduce the glare, you have to flip this little lever that offsets the mirror a little bit so that the high beams that fell behind you don't blind you. And the problem is that gave me two different angles of reflection when I was trying to light the print up to photograph it. But I eventually did get a photograph of it. Now, the photograph, I took that and I compared it to the prints of Mr. Spot, of bearing the name Bobby Glenn Spikes. Now, I say Bobby Glenn Spikes because I wasn't personally there to collect those prints. I'm going by what others had picked up of Mr. Spikes. And I determined that there was no identification there. In other words, that he was not the source of those prints.
Okay. And that
or this particular print, L14A, I should say.
And that's from the rearview mirror.
That's from the rearview mirror, okay. Sir.
So are we good to move on now to the spent cartridge case?
Yes. Spent cartridge cases are traditionally very difficult to work with. We had to consider what happens. You have a print on a cartridge case. It's forced into the chamber of a gun. And when the gun is fired, it instantly heats up several hundred degrees and gets put under pressure at several thousand pounds per square inch. And then it's yanked out of the chamber, sometimes slowly, as with a bolt action or a star on or the extractor star in a revolver, or pretty violently with a semi-automatic. So all of these are conspiring heat and pressure and lateral motion inside the chamber of the gun to cut, make it very difficult, sometimes impossible to get a print. It's extremely rare.
And in this case, were you able to get a print from that spent cartridge?
No, sir.
Okay. You also had five latent lifts from within the vehicle that they sent you. Did you tell me about your analysis of those?
Yes. Some of these were black lifts with fluorescent powder. I put these under a laser to try and get the powder to fluoresce. It did fluoresce. Unfortunately, what we have are smudges, fragment impressions, and just generally unusable.
So you could not make a comparison between your five latent lift prints that were sent to you to Mr. Spence?
No prints of value on there. There's nothing to compare.
Did you prepare a report in this case, Pat Birch Witness, Your Honor? I'm going to show you this, what's been pre-marked as Commonwealth's Exhibit Number 233. Does that fairly accurately show your report in this case?
Yes, sir. It's a copy of the report I sent.
All right. Your Honor, I move to introduce this Commonwealth's Exhibit 233.
Any objections? So ordered.
Are all of your opinions based on your training and your experience and your observations that you described to this jury?
Yes, sir. All based on my observations as interpreted through my training and experience.
Thank you, sir. No problem. Thank you, Justice.
Mr. Dollins, your bottom line, you had no prints tying Mr. Spikes to any of these items. Is that fair?
Correct, sir.
All right. Thank you.
All right, Your Honor, no further questions.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you coming.
Thank you,
Sir. Sorry, sir. Our next witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. I understand.
I do.
Can you state your name for the jury and where you're employed?
My name is Hunter Stanley, and I am employed at the Western Forensic Lab for the Kentucky State Police Technical Services Division in Madisonville, Kentucky.
How long have you been with the lab?
I have been employed there since September 2017.
And can you tell them your educational background and work experience?
I have a Bachelor of Science in Biomedical Science from Auburn University in Alabama, and a technical certificate in crime scene analysis from Pensacola State College in Florida.
And you testified as an expert in the Commonwealth of Kentucky?
Yes.
In this case, did you prepare a lab report number 6 in 22C2701?
I'm going to refer to my notes. Could you repeat that one more time?
Yes, sir. 22C2701 and it's report for 6.
Yes.
Okay. Can you tell the jury what items you received for testing?
I received a hat, shirt, and a piece of cardboard as my item 1 on my report. My item 3 is shoes from Bobby Spikes. My item 4 is jeans and belt from Bobby Spikes. My item 5 is a shirt from Bobby Spikes. My item 6 is a jacket from Bobby Spikes.
All right. What were you looking for when you were examining these items?
I was screening for blood on these items.
Okay. We also looking for hair. Or I guess in looking for blood, did you discover hair?
I did observe apparent hair on 2 of those items that I listed.
Okay. Is it a fair statement that no blood was found on any of these items?
I'm going to read from the results section of my report. No blood was found on items 1, 3, 4, 5, or 6, which are all of the items that I just described earlier.
Okay. Had you found blood, you would have forwarded on for DNA analysis, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. But because there's no blood, it was not forwarded on. Is that a fair statement? Those for DNA analysis on any blood?
Correct.
Okay. Then items 3 and 6, which would be the shoes and the shirt from Mr. Spikes. Tell me about those.
I believe item six is a jacket from.
Oh, I'm sorry. Box I read them wrong.
From the results section on my report, items three being the shoes from Bobby Spikes and item six being the jacket from Bobby Spikes, I stated that both those items contained apparent hair.
Those were forwarded on for another analyst that this jury's already heard from. Is that a fair statement?
I believe so, yes.
And did you prepare this report that you've been referring to?
Correct.
Prior to the interview, Commonwealth Exhibit 225, and I have no further. Well, I have one other question, sorry. Can you help
me? It's submitted.
Sir, are your opinions based on your training, your experience, and your observations of these articles?
Correct. Yes, they are.
No further questions.
Ross?
Just a few quick questions, Mr. Stanley. And I'm just reviewing the method you used to determine whether there was blood on these items. And you used the leukomalachite green test for the shirt.
Correct.
Okay. Exactly. Could you kind of explain what that test is?
Okay. The specific shirt you're referring to is my item.
What's leukomalachite and how do you?
It is a quick color change test that shows a green color when it is positive.
Okay. Is it something that you spray onto the shirt or wipe onto the shirt? How do you administer it to the shirt?
It's when you test the shirt, you take the item, you break it into sections, and then you swab one section at a time, and then you take that swab and you apply the leukomalachite green to the swab and you look for a color change.
Okay. And so based on after testing each of these sections, you found no blood on this shirt whatsoever.
That is correct. I did not find blood on that shirt.
And then the phenolphthalein test, what does that test consist of?
That is the same type of test as the leukomalachite green test, but it produces a bright pink fluorescent color, which indicates positive.
Okay. And same procedure?
Correct. It is the same as the leukomalachite green test. It just produces a different color to show the positive.
Okay.
The reason that the leukomalachite green test was performed on that particular shirt was that it was a red color. So swabbing the shirt could transfer some red staining from the dye of the shirt.
Okay. And then after conducting these tests, there was no blood detected.
Correct. There was no blood on those items.
Thank you, Mr. Stanley. That's all I have, Ron.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate your coming.
Thank you.
No other witnesses today,
you're welcome. Remember when I told you we'd be through by 4 o'clock?
Yeah.
All right. We are finished for the day. I would like for you all to follow my generally given admonition and not discuss the case among yourselves with anybody else or allow it to be discussed in your presence. Do not access news media or social media or play detective by getting on the internet. So, with all that said, enjoy your evening, and we'll see you in the morning. Gentlemen, can we get started again at 8:30?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Judge.
Very well. We'll see you in time to get started at